Welcome to Jewish History with Rabbi David Katz, connecting the human side to Jewish history. For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.
Hi, it's Tuesday afternoon, and I want to say a few words about the situation in Israel. I noticed, thanks to the sponsorship of the Brothers Garden, the Doctors Garden, Moshe and Morty, each one a different field of medicine. Very generous of them to sponsor in honor of their parents for the wonderful Pesach that they had. Again, we're appreciative. Today is Israel Independence Day and all that, and made me think a little bit along those lines about some problems we have that are going on currently vis-a-vis the current war. What I have in mind specifically is, I saw in the paper, I forget, maybe it was the Times of Israel, or it's one of those places, Jerusalem Post, an article, it's something that I noticed myself, and that is, Israel has done a terrible job in terms of PR, putting its case forward. Win, lose, or draw, the Hamas has scored a great victory over here in the area of propaganda and the area of ideas, which is a shame. And I'm talking about the fact that now it's part of the parlance and the discourse that Israel has no right to exist at all. And even though liberal Israelis and leftists and that sort of thing are trying to say, listen, I'm a nice person, I help the Palestinians, I'm in favor of a two-state solution, I want everybody to live in peace and harmony, blah, 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 blah. Nothing works, because the Taina is an ideological structural one, and the very fact you're part of a group of colonial dispossessors makes you, number one, chayav misa, and number two, there's no compromise. You have to go, either die or leave. And what would have been considered extreme rhetoric is now mainstream. That's the point. You hear it around the world. And the slogans are cleverly tailored for that. You understand? It's just become part of the way, especially the college students. I don't know if they know what they're talking about, but I think many of them do. And they just don't give a darn. They want Israel destroyed. Like Cato, you know, the elder in Rome, Carthage must be destroyed. That's how they're going to finish every sentence. And Israel has not made a good reply to this. To the best of my knowledge, and I'm not that much of a news junkie, just a little bit of a news junkie. You see, Israel has no good articulate people to put their case over and show up the other side in a rhetorically impressive way. It's a problem. We end up relying on this person who's not Jewish and that one and that guy, I don't know the names, the British guy and the other one. What's going on over here? Am Chacham V'Navon? Not really. And so it's just interesting how this happened. And it made me think. So I looked at this article and I said he's right. And in my peculiar fashion, as I do, I started thinking of the historical roots of this. And therein lies a tale, as far as I'm concerned, as I'm telling you my opinion here, that's all, of how historical trends develop, l'tov or l'ra, and how historical events are products of combinations of mega trends on the one hand, large sweeping trends, and often local petty personality things on the other hand. It's just interesting. So I'm trying in my own way, in my opinion, as they said, to sort of dissect how the current situation has popped up, that Israel's been caught mamish with their pants down, not only militarily, and they had to suffer all those horrible losses on October the 7th. But as I say before, they've been caught with their pants down in the Hasbara, in the propaganda department, in putting over their point of view. And I guess they're just relying on residual, people having positive feelings toward Israel, which may work for certain generations, and it doesn't. So this is a big failure of the Bibi government. Not the only one, but it's a big failure to be with government. I don't know if the other side would do better, the leftists, but hello, dubber who. And it's part, as I see it, of the career of Netanyahu and the Likud party and the Labor party in the last 40 years or so, maybe even longer. You see, Israel started out for the first 30 years under Mapai party was Ben-Gurion and Eshkol and Golda Meir and so forth. And the truth of the matter is they were hardliners in the same way the Likud is now. But they didn't, you know, appear to be so much. Since they were socialists and they were, you know, leftists in the economic sense and part of progressive movements as it was seen at that time. So he didn't quite have the harsh figure. I mean, Ben-Gurion a little bit. But on the world stage, you had articulate spokesman for Israel. And you had a number of, and most importantly, they put a lot of time and effort in the building of a foreign ministry. That means you have ambassadors, you have consuls, you have people whose job is to put out your side of the story. Because the other side is always going to be putting out their side of the story. And you have to get to the journalists first. And you have to learn how to spin the news because the other side is doing spinning the news all the time. That's what they're doing. If you can't counter-spin it, then you're messed over, right? Nobody wants to be screwed that way. And for the first 30 years, there wasn't really an opposition in Israel to what I would describe today as the right-wing policy of the left-wing governments. So in the 50s, in the 60s, certainly until the 73 war, when Golda Meir was still in, she was a stark right-winger. Now, you can debate in an academic forum, was it the right thing or wrong? But I'm saying that's, you know, how they put it out there. And Israel was pretty good at getting their opinions out. I remember Abba Ibn, if anybody remembers that guy. And before that, Moshe Sharet. And they had people. Golda Meir spoke a good English. And she spoke well. And therefore, they were an important presence on the media circuit. And Israel, since not only 1948, 1918, has been fighting and has to fight constantly a physical war and a media war, war of communications. That's just the way it goes. Israel is the only country that's constantly attacked. And Israel is the only country whose very legitimacy is always called into question. So that if America does something wrong, nobody says America should no longer exist. If Israel did something wrong, they would say Israel should not exist. You see? And so it's just interesting that they got themselves back into this corner. Now again, the government department is supposed to handle this, particularly in emergency times, should be the foreign ministry. The problem is, and it's true not only in Israel, the type of people who go into the foreign ministry jobs are what we would call today woke. You see? It's always been like that because you need a pretty good education in an Ivy League school or the Israeli equivalent of that. You want to hang around outside of the country people who are not like yourself. You pick up their way of thinking, their way of talking. It happens. And you see, I'll just give an example off the top of my head. I see some people say like this, Israel should reoccupy the Gaza Strip and kick the others out. That might sound okay at a Ben-Gvir rally or something. If you're an Israeli ambassador facing in a European capital or somewhere, and they're going to fly. You see? So I'm just saying the diplomat has to learn to be a diplomat vis-a-vis the fellow Jews and vis-a-vis the Goyim. That's the nature of the game, nature of the beast. I won't say Israel was always outstanding in this regard, but they had a couple of heavy hitters. Now, in 77, Menachem Begin got elected. Then you had a problem that you have in American politics as well, what we call the deep state, meaning the people, let's say, for example, in the foreign ministry, were left-wingers. They had experience. They had talents. They did. They've been around the world. You understand, I put Israel's message over. However, they also picked up the kind of leftist way of thinking, honestly and sincerely. So the Arab-Israeli conflict requires a complete withdrawal from the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. It requires the establishment of a Palestinian state alongside the Israeli state. Kahina v'kahina. And once the Labor Party and other left-wing Zionist parties, hear what I said, left-wing Zionists, because that's important. Today, right now as we speak, all these mobs and rioters are saying it's impossible to have left-wing Zionists. If you're left-wing, you can't be a Zionist. It's interesting. So all these political parties in Israel, like the Mapai and the Mapam and the others, moved already to the left wing of the side of the question, how to deal with the Palestinians. And they said we should have a Palestinian state. Mamish under, first under King Hussein, then under Arafat, different ways. As you know, it took about 15, 20 years, and they got it from in the Oslo agreements of 1993, 1994. The thing is, when the Likud won under Begin, it was an unbelievable shock. I won't say it's not really a good example, but I'll use an example to show how shocking it was. It's like when Trump won and you're a Democrat. They freaked out. I remember in 2016, when Trump won, they moms went into a meltdown. Yeah, they couldn't handle it. I'm sure you remember it, right? I mean, they momish melted down. So when you had Malcolm Begin come to power, and he said, there's no way we're going to throw over West Bank. It's part of Israel. I'm in favor of expanding the settlements and all that sort of thing. The other parties cringed and said, no, we disagree. And we want more like what America wants, what Europe wants. Two-state solution, everything goes along with that. Right? We can handle it. The problem is that the majority of the voters in Israel agreed with the right-wing perspective. Certainly after you had rises of terrorism in this year and that, I'm not going through Hazara, the whole business. But, you know, a number of times, Intifada and the suicide bombers, all the rest of it, that simply made a lot of people say like this, ain't no way you'll ever get any kind of peace with the Palestinians. If you set up Palestinian states, I'll have a base to attack us from, mamish like Gaza was under Hamas. And since we won't be able to go in there, because you can't go into another state, so they can build up who knows what, mamish the way Hamas did, with the tunnels and the soldiers and the guns of business. I mean, I'm not going to say I prophesied that this would happen, but I prophesied that this would happen. You know, not exactly this way, but, you know, I used to say they're building a Stalingrad over there. I said this for years in my speeches and elsewhere. That's what they did. Ad kedei kach that, you know, Israel is not exactly, if I understand the situation correctly, even at this moment, Israel not exactly sure how they will win unless they kill that mamzer. You know, that's how it goes, right? Now, what that means is they developed a divide between the left and the right over the very question of the existence of a Palestinian state and that sort of thing, which had not been the case before the Yom Kippur War. All right? There was a solid consensus against it. Now, to the left-wingers, the people in the Likud, like I said, like Trump, you know, how can anybody vote for these guys? That's what they said. And they're such losers, and they're dumb, and so forth and so on. And their ideology is stale, and whatever. That's what they thought. That's basically, they held the whole Likud and everything on the right in contempt. So it reminds you very much of the Democrats looking how they look at the Republicans in recent decades. The problem is that the left wing in Zionist politics have really screwed themselves over by mistreating the Sephardim when they came to Israel. I think most people here listening to this know what I'm talking about. They really messed them over and treat them bad. And an elephant doesn't forget. And so once their children rose of age, they said, we're not going to vote for a Labor Party and all this kind of junk. We're going to vote for Likud. And that's pretty much what has happened in the last 50 years. Pretty much. With a few exceptions. Okay? And this has simply driven the left wing crazy. Because demographically speaking, they know that the right wing have more children than they do, especially the Frum. And I want to see the Frum to keep us regarding the whole nine yards. And, you know, it doesn't look good for them in the future. In other words, will they be ever able to win the left, a election with a solid majority? You never know. You can't predict, but it doesn't look like it. So that's very depressing, right? At the same time, most of the elites in Israel came from the left. They went to those universities. They hung around those parties. They're all related to each other. It's a, you know, it's a deep state. And so, already in time of Begin, he first appointed, I remember when he came into office, he appointed Moshe Dayan as a minister of foreign affairs. But afterwards came Shamir and these other guys who were ideologues, true believers, right wingers. It was hard for the foreign ministry, you know, to get into this, because how, if I'm a left winger, how can I defend on television the fact that in 1982, Israel was bombing the heck out of Beirut and killing innocent civilians and all the rest of it? It can be done, but you have to be very articulate, very thought out, and you have to be, you know, 100% believer in the mission. Again, Abba Ibn did that in 1956. You can go online and listen to those speeches. And afterwards, smack, it's a very famous story. I think it's a true story. That in the 50s once, Ben Gurion, who had a trigger, who was trigger happy, launched some kind of attack on Syria. I think it was in 51. And America blew a gut and really cussed him out. It looked like Israel just committed naked aggression. And Abba Ibn was the Israeli ambassador to the United Nations. And he gave a speech defending what Israel has done and putting them in the right. And the famous story is Ben-Gurion wrote him a letter. He said, I guess, I'll tell you, this is what Ben-Gurion said, quote, I'll tell you the truth. I was already thinking maybe I did the wrong thing, but after I heard your speech, I felt everything I did was right. Now, that's how good of a arguer he was. Because he went to Cambridge University, and he was a good debater, and all that sort of thing. I mean, that's, you know, the way it went. Okay. Now, Begin fell from power after 6 years, and Shamir was in for a couple years in the 80s, off and on, and then came Bibi. Already from the time of Shamir and afterwards, he had a problem that, as they say, the deep state, the people in the foreign ministry, don't agree with the government's policy. They think that they're being too harsh on the Arabs, and they should have more time for a two-state solution, and, you know, things like that. They want things to be, you know, more in accordance with political correctness. The right-wingers have always said like this, you're nuts. If you go for PC in the Middle East, you'll die. You see? If you make concessions, you die. And so, there was this pilug, this split, as I see it, between the people who were elected to office, like the ministers in the government, and the people who are the bureaucrats, the civil servants who run the whole show, and that's in the foreign ministry department. So an ideal situation is, in any country, that the president and the secretary of state are on the same page and basically agree with each other. It doesn't have to be agree on everything, and that they cooperate. When you get to cooperating, then you get, you know, people moving in the same direction. It's possible to carry out some foreign policy. Because everybody agrees on the Mahalach, and then everybody in the government, in the relevant departments, pushes that Mahalach in their own way. The propaganda people, the diplomatic people, the military people, and so forth. But what happens when the politician wants to go this way, but the bureaucrats don't want to go that way. They want to go a different way. Then you have a problem. Now, again, in a perfect world, you work it out. Chuo Barov Yoetz, as they say. You get together and you talk it through. You talk it through. And you make this point, they make the point, you have a dialogue. And hopefully, out of the dialogue will come some kind of consensus. Now I hear where you're coming from. I didn't hear it before. Now I do. Something like that. But this did not happen in Israel because the left and the right kind of despise each other. And the right keeps saying to the left, why can't you see, you know, what you're doing is suicidal? The left keeps saying to the right, why can't you see what you're doing is suicidal? And they have a tremendous contempt for each other. Similar to the situation in the United States of America now, in which the Democrats and Republicans have unbelievable contempt for each other. Therefore, it's hard to get any kind of a consensus, which is tough in a democracy, which relies on consensus. And so, what happened was that you had ambassadors, ministers, foreign people who were sent out there abroad to go in embassies and all that kind of stuff to defend policy that they themselves don't actually believe in. It's not too long before the host government and people can see that the local ambassador doesn't believe in it. He just got a total line. That takes away a veil of credibility, right? A valence for what the ambassador or the consul or the spokesman or whatever says. It takes away a veil. And the communication wars, the TV wars, as we call it, now the internet wars, are very important. This stuff, we see it right now as we speak. Now, here comes the petty politics. Who was the foreign minister in Israel once upon a time? Like for many years, it was three people. It was first Moshe Sharet, then Golda Meir, and then Abiban for the first 25 years. All three of them were fairly capable. Sharet was Mamash Gavarava in Zionism. He and Ben-Gurion disagreed a lot. I mean, a lot. But somehow they made it work. And when Sharet held that Begin's policy was too aggressive towards the Arabs, there's an argument for that. He basically was fired. And Ben-Gurion put in Golda Meir, who agreed with him. So in other words, there was no longer a problem of the foreign ministry representing what the prime minister wants, because they got a new foreign minister, which is something you can do in a democracy. Now comes the funny story, the sad story. Who became the prime minister in the 90s? Bibi. And he's been off and on since, I guess he came in 95. Now it's almost 2025. So a lot of the time, the last 30 years, he's been the prime minister. Okay. The reason he's prime minister is the public, in terms of numbers, there is a strong left, but there's a stronger right. Especially the Sfarim and the others. They don't trust the Arabs as far as you can throw them. They're not shocked or surprised by what happened October 7th. And therefore, they're voting for Likud, even though everybody votes for Likud knows Likud stinks also. Right? Again, it reminds you of Trump. You know, people vote for him even though they don't say he's a good person. They vote for Likud even though they say he's a bunch of, you know, ambitious political hacks. But Bibi's flourished in an environment in which if you don't vote for him, you vote for somebody to the left who's going to bring in a Palestinian state next door to Tel Aviv. And so in that way, he's held on to power. And the fact that he keeps winning election after election, by which I mean he gets enough votes for his party and then combines with the Frum parties and another party or two. Each time he snatches victory from the jaws of the Labor Party, of the Zionist left, and it drives them crazy. Particularly this last election, too. I'm sure you remember, before the election of the current government, didn't they have like three or four elections, one after the other, because they couldn't get a majority? Even right-wingers, like the Ruskies over here, what's the guy's name, Victor Lieberman, said, I can't stand Bibi. You understand? So notice his personality is too much of a turnip. It became a personal thing, which could be true. So the result is that since 1995, when Netanyahu has won, it's never by a lot. It's enough. It's never not a lot. But when you have a situation like that, you have all the worst parts of coalition government because Bibi's going to be a prime minister. But who gets to be number two? Who gets to be the foreign minister? Everybody's dreaming, all the politicians in the Likud are dreaming, I'm going to be a foreign minister, and then I'll get a lot of exposure, I'll go around the world, I'll look like I have gravitas, and then I'll become prime minister. You see, next time, or two elections later. This is how it goes. Now, are you shayach to the parsha? Do you have the proper education, the understanding of international events? You know, do you speak English well? Anything like that? It doesn't matter. These guys are all puffed up in their own minds. I'm sorry to say this. And they think they can do anything. And their English is good enough and all the rest of it. And they get a lot of prestige walking into a room and say, he's the foreign minister. And they go to a government to get red carpet because of official visits. And the result is everybody wants a job. And Netanyahu, who actually could be a foreign minister, because he is into foreign affairs, and he speaks a good English. He's not stupid, especially when he's abroad. Has always found himself a situation where he's forced to give the job of foreign minister to somebody he doesn't like. But if he wants to have a government, he's going to do it anyway. I remember from the very first time, it's that guy David Levy, who was from Morocco. He had no education. Yeah, he wasn't right to be a foreign minister. It was in the time of Carter and then Clinton and all the rest of it. You're dealing with Arafat. But he commanded a large group of the party. A lot of the Likud is dependent on the Sephardi votes. He was a big vote getter for the Sephardim. And so he began the foreign minister. And later was other guys, every one of whom, number one, wasn't right for the job. Number two, couldn't really speak English well. They weren't masters of communication. They didn't take a course in that stuff, which you have to do, unless you're a natural. And you have to marshal the arguments, like in Abraham Lincoln, you know, you got to get your facts and arguments in a row. So when you go on a show or whatever, and you have your 10, 20, 30 seconds to make your case, you say point one, point two, point three, point four, point five in a row, and you finish with point six. You know what I mean? Instead of just bad, bad, schmeh. And I forget all the names of the guys. A lot of them were losers. He's never found a guy who could be a foreign minister his way, who agrees with his policies, and who's not a nincompoop. That's pretty sad what I just said. But Netanyahu has had to learn to be a politician. And in politics, you do what you got to do. And if he didn't agree with what I just said, he wouldn't be beholden to be prime minister. And so he holds his nose and he does it. The guy they have now, this guy Katz, Israel Katz, I don't know who that is. He's not a foreign minister type, especially in a wartime. You know what I'm saying? And he says dumb things, the headlines from him are always dumb. Israel can't afford to have dumb. We're in a war. You have to have smart. You have to articulate. And just like the other side has slogans and things like this, we have to do that. So in other words, they need a major effort of message discipline. And, you know, easy to understand bullet points to get out there. And we're not doing it, not as far as I can see. The most eloquent defender of Israel's policies and foreign policy is the USA. Right? Which is sad. Right? Now, again, Netanyahu would rather have somebody he trusts or whatever to be the foreign minister, but he wasn't able to get it. And so what he did was he like defunded the foreign ministry. He broke it up into different pieces. Do you remember there was this lady who's in charge of public information, which is supposed to be a job for the diplomats? And she quit right after October 7th. I remember who she was. Because he had to give out votes, seats, if he wouldn't have a coalition now. And this guy had it, and that guy had. He gave this guy Dermer to be in charge of, talking to foreign governments. I don't remember exactly what it was. You didn't allow to have a large and competent foreign ministry because to Bibi, the ministers and the ambassadors and that kind of stuff don't like him, don't agree with him. So why should I be good with you? I can do a better job myself, holds Bibi. If he had nothing else to do, it's possible that's true. I see him go around the world instead of you. He knows how to get along and make, you know, get, what's the right word? You know, bullet points out there. He does. Well, it's not long ago he was in all around the world. You can go online, you can see it. He was even in Moscow at the May Day parade with Putin a couple years ago. Him and another world leader. And they're getting big COVID. But you can't be a prime minister, run the politics, run the war and all the rest of it, and devote the necessary time to stating and making the case for Israel. You understand? And so there is nobody today. If you're from, all right, so you go, you know, you go on the pro-Israel sites. That's just talking to the preaching to the converted. You understand? We need to preach to the unconverted. Israel has done a terrible job making the case to Jewish students in America. That's why so many of them are anti-Israel. You understand? That's why so many of them are chanting the slogans, Israel should cease to exist. You know, they bought the Kool-Aid. Why can't someone in Israel, why can't there be a department in Israel that works overnight all the time and has one news piece after another, getting it out there? We do have talented people in Israel, but they're not in the right position. And they won't be as long as the situation I'm describing is still continuing, which Netanyahu figures he can run the whole show himself, but you can't. And the foreign ministry is in the hands of, you know, political hacks and things like that. And, I mean, off the top of my head, who's the ambassador of Israel to America now? I know the answer, but I'm just saying, I don't think most people even know. If you know, have you seen him come out forcefully and rhetorically on the news and all the rest? Not me, right? I'm sure he's very good at what he does, and he is. It's General Herzog. He's very good for behind-the-scenes stuff. But you need somebody for not behind-the-scenes stuff. And so we see, as always, the machlokes that we have among us is our biggest enemy. The pettiness and the willingness to chop off the nose to spite the face has always been a big Jewish flaw. It's just sad this is taking place during a wartime. And I'll tell you again, win, lose, or draw. The Hamas has won a big victory on the public information point, on the propaganda point, right? I don't see at this point how Israel is going to avoid a two-state solution when this is all over. I hope I'm wrong. I'm just telling you. Now, the good Lord created Trump, and that's, you know, throws all calculations out the window. You never know with him. You might never know. But as far as I can use the word keder chateva, right? Even though when it comes to Israel, things don't exactly work keder chateva, but to the degree they do, remember, we have to do our hashtadlis. If you're a government, you have to work your head off. And then daven that your efforts should be crowned with success by siyata ishmaya. It's not a replacement for hashtadlis, you see? And Israel's been failing, especially in this part and the hashtadlis part. And so you don't have, across the line, Israeli spokesmen and diplomats dominating the discourse. And that's a big tragedy because it doesn't have to be that way. When it comes to combat fighting, it is what it is. When it comes to verbal fighting, we should be able to do better. But there's so much period, and I'm sure so many people in the foreign ministry and their relatives and their friends were marching against the government. They disagree with them on the judicial reform. They think he's a crook. I get it. I understand that. And therefore, they can't, you know, push themselves to defend Israel in this hour of need on the information front. And as I said before, the damage is going to be, you know, is going to be what it is. Be long. You know, and I know, they said the other day, oh, I guess the figures for the dead and wounded in Gaza were wrong. Let's cut it in half. That's a big deal. You just pointed out the other guys have been lying through their teeth from the beginning one. How come Israel isn't having that point home? The liar said this. The liar said that. They don't know how to do that. Apparently. They don't know how to do that. So, in Yiddish, there's an expression, as God will, shits the bezem. If God wants to, a broom can speak. We need, siyata ishmaya, get a lot more Israeli brooms to speak. and locally as well. So it's, you know, we live in a crazy world, and the Congress is falling apart, and you know, Ukraine is falling apart, and the Middle East situation is falling apart, and the bad guys are, you know, licking their chops and all the rest of it. But somebody has to think of the claw and find those people and bring them to the fore who can get past the differences of the protim and concentrate on doing what's necessary for the success of the claw. I think that's true of every country. It's particularly true of Jews in Jewish history. It has to do with the Sfira and the Talmid Rabbi Kiva and all that sort of thing, if I wanted to give a rabbinical sermon, which I do not. But it is that kind of business. So when we say L'haftarecha kamocha zeh klal gadol b'Torah, I don't know if it has to be a haftarecha kamocha, but, you know, there's something between that and the opposite extreme. The opposite extreme. I just want to get that off my chest. And I do want to thank, as I say, our sponsors, Moshe and Morty, and the parents, of course, for sponsoring. And maybe I'll return to the subject, we'll see. But as it is, this is sobering, to my mind, it's a sobering set of thoughts for Israel's 76th birthday.
For sponsorship opportunities or to support this podcast, please visit our donate page at www.support.rabbidavidkatz.com.